45 now.
Welcome to another edition of Hey Doc. I'm Dr. Harold Lasky, Medical Director and Physician at Southside Medical Center, right here in Jacksonville, Florida. I'm your host for the next half hour. With me today is my co-host and wife, Carmen Lasky, a certified EMT. Together, we hope that you will find the show informative, educational, as well as entertaining. For all of you plant lovers, there may be some good in the outlandish machinations of our Attorney General, Jeff Sessions. In his most recent act, just 2 days ago, the Attorney General rescinded three memos from the past administration that had adopted a policy of non-interference with marijuana-friendly state laws. So what does this move do? But before we get to that answer, let me just mention that of the 50 states in the United States, 8 states have legalized both the sale and possession of marijuana for both medical and recreational use. 23 states and the District of Columbia have passed laws allowing some degree of medical use of marijuana, and 14 states have taken steps to decriminalize it to some degree. This leaves only around 17 states where any use of marijuana is illegal. Anyway, getting back to the question of Jeff Sessions' statement on Thursday.
Essentially, his statement marked a shift of federal policy from the hands of approach the government agencies adopted to leash federal prosecutors across country to decide individually how to prioritize resources to crack down on pot possession, distribution, and cultivation of the drug in states where it is legal. There is a real conflict between federal and state law.
Sessions also stated that the DOJ is now looking at, quote, rational marijuana policy. Now, I don't exactly know what that means, but he went on to say that the shift is a return to the rule of law. He further stated that prosecutors should follow the well-established principles that govern all federal prosecution, which require federal prosecutors deciding which cases to prosecute to weigh all relevant considerations of the crime, the deterrent effect of criminal prosecution, and the cumulative impact of particular crimes on the community.
Back in 2013, as an increasing number of states began to legalize marijuana, Cole released a directive to federal prosecutors that essentially adopted a policy on non-interference with marijuana-friendly state laws.
In August of 2013, the then Deputy Attorney General of the United States, James Cole, wrote a memorandum for all U.S. attorneys. The subject was guidance regarding marijuana enforcement.
In that memo, the Deputy Attorney General stated some of the major objectives of the DOJ, including preventing violence and the use of firearms in the cultivation and distribution of marijuana, and preventing drug driving and the health consequences associated with marijuana use.
But this went on to say that although those priorities would continue to guide the DOJ, that the federal government would continue to rely on states and local law enforcement to address marijuana activity through enforcement of their own laws. In that memo, the department recognized that the drug was still illegal under the Federal Controlled Substances Act, but it gave federal prosecutors permission to focus their resources elsewhere, so long as the states didn't threaten other federal priorities, such as preventing the distribution of the drug to minors and targeting cartels.
In other words, the memo said outcomes we saw associated with marijuana, but essentially said that otherwise, let's let the states deal with it.
The U.S. Attorney's Office in Colorado released a statement Thursday saying there are no plans to change marijuana prosecution. Now, Congress voted in its last session to extend a spending provision known as the Rohrabacher-Blumenauer Amendment, which blocked the Justice Department from using federal funds to impede the implementation of state medical marijuana law.
Remember that while President Trump was running to secure the Republican nomination in 2016, he sat down with a reporter in Colorado.
That reporter specifically asked Trump about states' rights versus federal law as it pertained to marijuana sales. When Trump was asked if he would use the DOJ to squash legal recreational marijuana use, he said, again, this is a quote, "I wouldn't do that. No, I think it's up to the states. Yeah, I'm a states person. I think it should be up to the states." Absolutely. That's pretty interesting.
Remember, Jeff live session is the same person that when asked a question about the Ku Klux Klan publicly stated, and this is a quote, "I thought those guys were okay until I learned they smoked pot."
And although most U.S. attorneys will most likely not take this as a directive to openly harass those in states that have legalized marijuana, it does open up the opportunity for, say, a rogue U.S. attorney who's not about protecting the public, but is more about an ideological opposition to legalization to prove that legalization doesn't work by creating chaos and disruption.
Remember, according to the latest Gallup poll, 64% of Americans favor legalization, including majority of Republicans.
This is an unpopular memo and will put a lot of Republicans in a very awkward position, especially in states like Colorado and California. These are precisely the representatives who are going to be most vulnerable in this November's election. Many of them have released outraged statements condemning the decision, but it might not be enough to persuade voters not to punish President Trump by voting them out.
So, the end result of this policy could well be to accelerate the liberalization of the nation's marijuana laws. A backlash could help more Democrats get elected and push elected Democrats to more unambiguously support legalization.
Don't be surprised if every Democrat running for president in 2020 favors ending the federal prohibition on marijuana and returning the question to the states. So the end result could be that Jeff Sessions did a great service to the legalization move. Now, as is our most common practice here on the Hey Doc Show, Carmen and I would like to take a medical topic and explain it by using the who, what, where, when, why, and how process, or what we call W4H.
On one of our most recent shows, we talk about glaucoma. So today, we are going to try to expand on some of the other eye problems that are most common.
We have already described the anatomy of the eye in that program, so we won't go into that today. If you'd like to hear that program, you can go on the internet to WBOB.com and click on the button for podcast. There, you'll be able to click on the Hey Doc podcast and listen to many of our previous shows.
The first is age-related macular degeneration, or AMD. This is pretty common and is present in more than 10 million people in the U.S. In fact, it is the leading cause of blindness in people over the age of 65.
In the center of the retina is a thin layer of tissue that lines the back of the eye. Its purpose is to receive light that the lens at the front of the eye has focused and convert the light into neural signals and then send those signals onto the brain for visual recognition. Somewhere near its center is something called the macula, which contains specialized cells for high acuity vision.
Whereas loss of peripheral vision may go unnoticed for some time, damage to the macula will result in loss of central vision, which is usually immediately obvious.
AMD is a condition that affects center of the retina, called the macula, as we just said, which is the part of the eye responsible for our most acute vision, which we use when reading, driving, and performing other activities that require fine, sharp, or just straight-ahead vision. Typically, changes in the macula from AMD are gradual, but in some cases, visual loss faster and more noticeable.
There are two different types of AMD, dry macular degeneration and wet macular degeneration.
About 90% of people diagnosed with AMD have dry AMD.
This condition occurs when the tissues of the macula begin to age and thin.
People with dry AMD typically experience a less severe degree of vision loss, and it develops slowly.
Now, early AMD always starts out as dry, but in about 10% of cases, it can develop into wet AMD.
Wet macular degeneration occurs when delicate, abnormal blood vessels form under the retina.
These fragile vessels leak blood and fluid beneath the retina, causing it to distort or scar. The leakage of the fluid and blood that gives its name wet. The leakage is also the reason for loss of sharp vision in people with wet AMD.
Wet AMD progresses far more rapidly than dry AMD and has more severe effects, such as complete central vision loss. Although this type of AMD affects only about 10% of people with the disease, it is still responsible for 90% of severe vision loss that's associated with AMD.
This is a great time to tell you about Southside Medical Center. I'm Dr. Harold Lasky, and I've been the medical director and physician at Southside Medical Center for the past 29 years. We're located at 3604 Southside Boulevard, just two blocks south of the Beach Boulevard intersection between the Pottsburg Post Office and the Tulsa Welding School. We will treat your pains, sprains, and strains. Our practice emphasizes chronic pain management as well as anti-aging medicine. We also have an office-based substance treatment program for those who need it. Southside Medical Center is open 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday. If you would like to make an appointment or ask any questions about Southside Medical Center, please call us at 641-4411. That's 641-4411. Southside Medical Center, where your health is our primary care.
Welcome back to the Hey Doc Show. Carmen and I are now going to continue talking about acute macular degeneration and eye disease. Before we go on, let's enumerate the risk factors for AMD.
First are the genetic factors, things that we really have no control of, such as age, family, history of AMD, skin and eye color, since people with light color skin and eyes are more likely to develop AMD.
But there are risk factors that we can control. Now listen carefully to these. Smokers are 3 to 4 times more likely to develop AMD compared to non-smokers. And those with diets that are low in certain antioxidants, such as vitamin C, E, lutein, and even zinc, may be at risk. Also, obesity, high blood pressure, and even high cholesterol all can contribute to the development of AMD.
Also, don't forget that excessive exposure to sunlight is a factor we can control. So, protect your eyes from ultraviolet rays by wearing sunglasses.
Let's look at the symptom. Remember that AMD causes damage to the macula. And again, that's the part that gives us sharp central vision that we need to perform activities that require high-definition, straight-ahead vision. So what you see up close or at a distance may be blurry or hazy.
Brighter light may be needed when reading, or it may be difficult to adapt from bright light to low light. As the disease advances, there may be dark or blank spots in vision, or faces may become blurry.
Other signs include visual distortions, such as straight lines that appear kind of wavy, or objects appearing larger or smaller than they really are. And there may be dark or even empty areas in the central area of vision, or distortion of straight lines, as we've mentioned. You can actually monitor this yourself by using something called an Amsler grid. Now, we've created a link so that you can get Amsler grid way more easily. Just go to www.bit.ly/Amsler grid. That's www.bit.ly/Amsler grid.
Since some changes in your AMD may only be detected by an eye care professional, it is important to see your eye doctor if you even think that you might have an eye problem.
The use of eye vitamins has been shown to help reduce the risk of progression in patients with moderate to advanced AMD. Well, wet AMD, this is treated with injected medications, and you can also use laser surgery by sealing off the leaking blood vessel. These are usually brief and painless outpatient procedures that slow and sometimes even reverse the progression of the degeneration. A small permanent dark spot may be left where the laser may contact.
Bulging eyes, or proptosis, occurs when one or both eyes protrude from the eye socket due to space-taking lesions such as swelling of the muscle, fat, and tissue behind the eye.
Would you like to see an image of proptosis? Go to www.bit.ly/proptosis. Next, we come to cataract. How common are these? Well, cataracts are the cause of half of blindness and 33% of visual impairment worldwide. As a matter of fact, more than half the people in the United States had cataract by the age of 80. So what is a cataract?
Simply put, it is a cloudy of the lens in the eye which leads to a decrease in vision. Cataracts often develop slowly and they can affect one or both eyes.
Symptoms may include fading faded colors, blurry vision, halos around light, trouble with bright lights, and trouble seeing at night. You can even have trouble driving, reading, or even recognizing face. Poor vision caused by cataracts may also result in an increased risk of falling. They are usually due to aging, but can be due to trauma or even radiation exposure. Can present at birth or following eye surgery.
A big risk factor is diabetes, but also smoking tobacco and prolonged exposure to sunlight and alcohol are risk factors.
You're probably wondering, what is it that causes the cloudiness in the eyes? Well, either clumps of protein or yellow-brown pigment may be deposited in the lens itself, reducing the transmission of the light to the retina at the back of the eye.
How can you attempt to prevent it? Wearing sunglasses, don't smoke.
Glasses may help initially, but if not, surgery can be used to remove the cloudy lens and replace it with an artificial one. About 20 million people are blind due to cataract, and it's the cause of approximately 5% of blindness in the United States. Well, how about colorblind?
It is not really a blindness per se, but better described as a color vision deficiency, an inherited condition that affects males more frequently than females. According to Prevent Blindness America, an estimated 8% of males and less than 1% of females have color vision problem.
Red-green color deficiency is probably the most common form of color blindness. Much more rare is a person who inherits a trait that reduces the ability to see blue and yellow hues. This blue-yellow color deficiency usually affects men and women equally.
Do you have difficulty telling if your colors are blue and yellow or red and green? Do other people sometimes inform you that the color you think you are seeing is wrong? If it's so, these are primary signs that you have a color vision deficiency.
Contrary to popular belief, it is rare for a colorblind person to see only in shades of gray. Most people who are considered colorblind can see colors, but certain colors appear washed out and are easily confused with other colors.
Colorblindness occurs when light-sensitive cells in the retina fails to respond appropriately to variation in wavelengths of light that enable people to see an array of colors.
A little bit of anatomy here. Photoreceptors in the retina are called rods and cones. Rods are much more plentiful, about 100 million rods in the retina. They are more sensitive to light, but rods are incapable of perceiving color.
There are 6 to 7 million cones in the human retina are responsible for color vision, and these photoreceptors are concentrated in the macula, which we talked about earlier in our show.
Inherited forms of color blindness often are related to deficiencies in certain types of cones or outright absence of these cones. Besides differences in genetic makeup, other causes of color vision defects or loss include Parkinson's disease, cataracts, and the use of a particular drug in epilepsy called teogabine.
Another cause of color blindness is a disease called Kallmann syndrome, which is an inherited disease that involves failure of the pituitary gland, which can also lead to incomplete or unusual gender-related development, such as of sexual organs.
Gene therapy has cured color blindness in monkeys, as was shown in research that was done at the University of Washington and University of Florida. There are actually some lenses for color blindness that enhance color perception, which are filters available in either contact lenses or even as eyeglasses.
While early findings look promising, gene therapy would not be considered for humans until treatments are proven to be safe.
Meanwhile, there is no cure for color blindness, but some coping strategies may help you function better in a color-oriented world.
Most people are able to adapt to color vision deficiency without too much trouble, but some professions such as graphic design and occupations that require handling various colors of electrical wiring depend on accurate color perception.
If you become aware of a color deficiency early enough in life, you may be able to compensate by training for one of the many careers that are not as dependent on the ability to see in a full range of colors. Some people use special lenses to enhance color perception, which are really filters that are available nowadays. You're next going to hear a short comedy skit by an actor by the name of Marty Feldman, who had a disease that we're going to talk about right after you listen to the clip.
How many animals have you got in there, then?
Just the one. It's a thing. Follow me home, you know. I didn't have the heart to send it away.
Is it tame?
Oh, up to a point.
What? What is it?
Well, to be frank, I'm not quite sure. No, I looked him up in the cattle breeder's guide. He wasn't in there. I looked him up in the standard book of British birds. He wasn't in there either. I finally found him in the book of Revelation.
Now, a lot of us remember as kids when other kids had crossed eyes. This is called strabismus, and it occurs when a person's eyes are not able to align on the same point at the same time. Symptoms of strabismus include double vision and even eye strain.
To avoid double vision, the brain may adapt by ignoring one eye. In this case, often no noticeable symptoms are seen other than minor loss of depth perception. This deficit may not be noticeable in someone who has had strabismus since birth or early childhood. They have likely learned to judge depth and distances.
Small angle and even intermittent strabismus are more likely to cause disruptive visual symptoms. In addition to headaches and eye strain, symptoms can include an inability to read comfortably, fatigue when reading, and an unstable or jittery vision. A risk here is that people of all ages who have noticeable strabismus may experience psychosocial difficulties.
Children with strabismus, particularly those with exotropia, which is an outward turn, may be more likely to develop a mental health disorder than normal-sighted children.
Strabismus can also be seen in Down syndrome, among other syndromes. The risk is increased among those with a family history of the condition. The extraocular muscles control the position of the eyes. Thus, a problem with the muscles or the nerves controlling those muscles can cause paralytic strabismus. The extraocular muscles are controlled by 3 cranial nerves, 3, 4, and 6. An impairment of cranial nerve 3 causes the associated eye to deviate down, while impairment of cranial nerve 4 can be congenital, causes the eye to drift up and slightly inward.
6 nerve palsy causes the eye to deviate inward, has many causes due to the relatively long path of the nerve. If a doctor is not careful, twisting of the baby's neck during forceps delivery can damage cranial nerve 6.
Evidence indicates a cause for strabismus may lie with the input provided to the visual cortex in the brain and allows for the strabismus to occur without direct impairment of any cranial nerves or extraocular muscle. And we said before, I think strabismus can cause amblyopia due to the brain ignoring one eye. So what is amblyopia? Ha, I knew you'd ask. Amblyopia is the failure of one or both eyes to achieve normal visual acuity despite normal structural health. During the first 7 to 8 years of life, the brain learns how to interpret signals that come from an eye through a process that's called visual development.
Development may be interrupted by strabismus if the child always fixates with one eye and rarely or never fixates with the other. To avoid double vision, the signal from the deviated eye is suppressed, and the constant suppression of one eye causes failure of visual development in that eye.
Also, amblyopia can cause strabismus. If a great difference in clarity occurs between the images from the right and left eyes, input may be insufficient to correctly reposition the eye. There are even other causes of visual difference between right and left eyes, such as asymmetrical cataracts.
As with other binocular vision disorders, the primary goal is comfortable, single, clear, normal binocular. As with other binocular vision disorders, the primary goal is comfortable, single, clear, normal binocular vision at all distances and direction of gaze.
Strabismus is usually treated with a combination of eyeglasses, vision therapy, and surgery, depending on the underlying reason for the misalignment. However, lazy eye, what's that? I didn't tell you that, did I? That's the other term for amblyopia. If that's minor and detected early, can often be corrected with use of an eye patch on the dominant eye and also vision therapy. With the use of eye patches, unlikely to change the angle of strabismus.
Can medications be used? Yes, in certain cases. In 1989, the US FDA approved botulinum toxin therapy for strabismus in patients over 12 years old.
The toxin is injected in the stronger muscle and it causes temporary and partial paralysis. Treatment may need to be repeated 3 to 4 months later once the paralysis wears off. I'd like you, our listeners, to know that I am one of several physicians right here in the Jacksonville area that has received certification to recommend medical marijuana to those patients with certain qualifying diagnoses. These now include amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, cancer, Crohn's disease, epilepsy, epilepsy, glaucoma, HIV, AIDS, seizure disorders, chronic muscle spasms, multiple sclerosis, Parkinson's disease, PTSD, a terminal condition, as well as other ailments and conditions, including certain diseases with chronic or long-term pain. For more information, you can call our office at 641-4411. We've also set up a website for our Medical Marijuana Society at www.medmarsoc.com. That's www.medmarsoc.com. We have also set up a special website at CompassionateCareJax.com, where you can get a whole lot more information on medical marijuana. You can also set up an appointment for an office visit to Southside Medical Center right on the website. Again, that website is CompassionateCareJax.com. Well, we've come to the end of another Hey Doc show. Carmen and I hope that you've enjoyed the past half hour and have found it interesting, educational, and maybe just a little bit entertaining.
So, from all of us here at Southside Medical Center, have a happy and healthy weekend. Goodbye.